Welcome to this week's episode of Angel Insights, brought to you by Syndicate Room. This is the show that delves inside the world of angel investors to reveal their tips, tactics, and strategies when it comes to uncovering and investing in the best startups. And joining me in the hot seat today, I'm delighted to welcome Rusbeh Bakker. Now, Rusbeh is not your traditional angel in the sense that he's also a full-time operator as the CEO of City Falcon and has worked in finance and strategy with roles at KPMG, Nokia, Skype, and Microsoft. And with more than 15 years of investing and trading experience, he looks for parallels when investing in startups and has invested in more than 10 startups since 2013. He also runs London Value Investing Club, where members discuss stock investment opportunities and share their investing views and theses. But enough from me, so let's dive into the show today with Rusbeh Bakker, CEO at City Falcon. Rusbeh, welcome to Angel Insights. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Now, I'd love for you to kick off today's episode by telling us how you really made your way into the entrepreneurial and tech world now as a founder and as an angel investor.
So I used to work at Skype. I spent 4 years there, and we got acquired by Microsoft. I was always fascinated with technology, having worked with product teams at Skype, and just looking at what was going on in the market. When I left Skype, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. But one thing I did was I learned how to code. And then while I was coding, the only source of income for me was trading and investing income. And that's where I looked at a few gaps in the market. I mean, the products were not necessarily up to the mark given the latest technology. They were super expensive, and a lot of it was not focused on retail consumers. From there, I built a first version of City Falcon. We got good feedback from users. We scaled it up from there.
And I'm always intrigued then when someone says they learned code. And how did you then go about that process? Because it can be a challenging one for many.
I mean, I'm originally from India, and one of the good things in India is that even during my school days, we had a little bit of coding. So I started coding when I was 15, but then moved into finance, did my ACA and all of that. But going back to coding was I was looking to actually have a lot of fun with it, and I can say that coding and building a product is really a lot of fun. So when I quit my job at Skype, Makers Academy, which is now really popular in London, had just started, and I was part of one of the early cohorts. It was a little difficult to start with, but 13 weeks, 12 hours a day, and I was able to create a product, so I was really happy about that.
And what would you advise then others maybe looking to learn code? Would you say that these coding boot camps are very worthwhile?
Absolutely, I think. A lot of people today who are looking to do their own thing struggle to find co-founders. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, a co-founder is like, having a relationship. The honeymoon period can last for anything from days to years. You never know. But I think if you want your baby to be successful, which is a startup, I think it's totally worthwhile for you to learn a bit of coding. And none of us are going to be perfectionist at the end of the course, but given the latest technology, given the amount of information on the internet, you can do some of the basic stuff, basic technology stuff yourself. Mm-hmm. Just to give an example, let's say if I look at my website and if there is some grammatical error or some typo. Now, instead of going back to the developer, I can change that within a few minutes myself.
And then before we discuss your angel investing career now, I want to hone in on the operational background first. And you were at Skype for nearly 4 years. So what were your biggest takeaways from working with such a behemoth like Skype? And how have you tried to apply them to your role now as the founder of City Falcon?
Sure. So, I mean, I think Skype was quite inspiring. I think there were takeaways not only from looking at Skype as a success, but also Skype that couldn't become WhatsApp or Slack. So we used to have most of the features that these two products had, but we somehow lost focus. And I think that was a learning in itself. So I think if I were to say three things that I learned from my experience at Skype, one would be a lot of focus on user experience, onboarding, and brand. So not just, I mean, those are one of the key things you look to do when you're building a new product. Second is about the people. The product managers at Skype were really passionate, I can say obsessed with their products, and that's what you need. But at the same time, one thing I realized is we stopped innovating, and a lot of focus then was on exit and monetization, which is why, unfortunately, we couldn't compete with WhatsApp and Slack.
And I want to unpack some things there. The first one you said about onboarding. Now, what's your take on the onboarding process now? What did you really kind of garner from the Skype experience? Was it that a lengthier process that's very effective might be worthwhile? Do you go for the simplistic and clean onboarding? What is it for you, particularly as a fintech product, which might need some education? How do you approach onboarding?
Sure. I mean, if you look at some of the products in fintech, especially, not fintech, but let's say financial services, a lot of them require you to go through lengthy trainings, mm-hmm. you know, lending sessions or going into help. And that's a waste today in 2016. I mean, I like the clean interface, you know, have one or two call to actions for the user, make it easy for them to understand. And a lot of your platform should be very intuitive. And that's what we've tried to do with City Falcon. We have a lot of work to do, and it's one of the challenges in fintech, which is it's difficult to find people that have done this before. So a lot of us are actually learning through this.
So how do you broach that then? As hiring, you know, and looking to scale City Falcon, with the lack of experienced fintech professionals in the industry, do you go then for kind of enthusiastic and ambitious young kind of sales and marketing people, or do you still try and hunt the experienced fintech specialist?
So finding experienced fintech specialist is very difficult and very, very expensive in London. Okay. You know, the big banks and the institutions can afford to pay a lot of money. We startups can't afford to do that. Mm-hmm. So our hiring strategy has been exactly what you said is, you know, hire smart people and train them on the job. Having said that, one of the issues we face is with, you know, when you have a camera app, right, it's very easy for everyone to understand. But with a fintech product, it's quite complicated, and which means that I do have to spend a lot of time with a lot of members in my team to make sure everything is, you know, as per the need of the users.
And you mentioned there about learning about the brand also from Skype. So how do you try and implement a brand into quite a frothy fintech environment in London? How have you gone about kind of raising the City Falcon brand amongst your peers?
So there is no right or wrong answer. Like we are trying a lot of things to help the brand. But what has really worked for us is we've been out there. So we've been at a lot of competitions, a lot of events, being on panels and a lot of that. Also having received awards from, you know, awards and recognition from Twitter, UBS, Standard Bank, you know, Toronto has really helped us with the profile. One of the things that I've also learned is the way Airbnb started their marketing, which was, you know, a lot of companies try to get, you know, a million users to like your product. But what Airbnb did was, you know, find 100 people, just 100, who love your product. Because when they love your product, they're going to spread the word. And that's how you start growing.
And how have you gone about sourcing your first 100? Was it all kind of raw incoming traffic, or did you actively go out and hunt them? And how have you kind of then attempted to scale up the 100 from there?
Sure. I mean, so a lot of it was we started off with growth hacking, mm-hmm. but then every time someone registered, I sent out emails. a lot of the process was automated, but we do get feedback from users. So I interact directly with users. I've even taken some users out for drinks if they're London-based, or have Skype calls on their experience and all of that. So that's how we got our 100 users. And from there, a lot of the growth has come through, you know, search engine, you know, events, you know, people promoting us on other sites. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things that is very satisfying as an entrepreneur is when you go to a Facebook forum on investing and you look at someone who is totally not connected to City Falcon recommending City Falcon to other users.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's success for us.
And I want to discuss City Falcon there because you mentioned it a few times now. So for listeners that maybe aren't aware, could you give us a brief synopsis of City Falcon and the kind of product offering?
So, I mean, if you look at financial newsfeed, typically it has been a chronological newsfeed, which means that if you're looking at your portfolio today, you will see what's happened last hour, last few hours, and maybe last couple of days. But that's not good enough for a fundamental investor. So what we do is we make sense of this financial news. So what we do is we rate every piece of news, tweets, and authors, which means that, let's say, for example, you have 3 million stories on oil in a week. We can tell you the top 10, 20, 30 stories that you should be looking at. What we also do is, imagine this, right? Going to a financial news website or an aggregator, everyone looks at the same news feed. So what we actually do is we personalize your news feed. So it's not any different from your Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter, where every user sees a different feed. So we do the exact same thing with financial news. And our platform is absolutely free. Some similarities in technology are, you know, something related. I mean, I don't know if people know, but Clout that rates people's influence on social media, and then Waze navigation system that learns from cloud curation.
And as a fintech startup emerging in London, I want to ask you about this kind of scene itself. And we constantly hear the drum being beaten for the London's fintech ecosystem. So what are your thoughts as an insider then on the progression of London's ecosystem as a fintech hub? I mean, are we doing as well as we're told we are?
So London, I believe, has, you know, a lot of strengths compared to the rest of the world. Right, a few of them being, hey, we are the center of the world, good access to EU, we can work with different time zones, you know, the political and financial capital, it's all London. And if you start from, you know, going from Monument to the West End, you will see so many banks, asset managers, wealth managers. Mm-hmm. So these are all the advantages, but I fear that we might lose out, you know, our title as the fintech capital of the world to New York. And I think there are two main reasons for that. One is capital. If you want to run a fintech company and compete against some of the giants, or even work with some of the giants and their expectations, it costs you a lot of money. An example of that is, you know, let's say pay-per-click, mm-hmm. right? If you're doing it on Google or other platforms, you could be paying up to £30 per click if you're targeting someone in the UK. And this is where it becomes expensive. So, I mean, you will read in the media that, yes, there's a lot of capital for fintech companies, but that's pretty much a small section of the market. That's pretty much when companies are looking to raise Series A. But for the early stage investing, there are a lot of startups that are struggling. And I've gone through this same experience, you know, raising funds. And I think the second thing is that London still is, or UK still, when it comes to startups, I feel is risk averse. And there's this stigma attached to failure. If you're trying to do something, but what if it fails? The way people still define exit, success is, success as a startup is exit, but you don't get much credit in terms of the learnings that you went through the process, learnings every time you fail. And the more ready you are to fail, the more you're going to try things. And some of those things will work. I wonder how long we can retain the title of fintech capital of the world.
And you mentioned that exits, which brings me to a part of your life which I'm really interested to discuss now, which is your own personal investing experience, and to merge the operations and the investing. So what do you make then of the move into the investing world? I mean, how do you feel your operational background has impacted your investing perspective now?
Sure. So I mean, it has completely changed the way I look at startups. And, you know, startups fit into different buckets. It could be a product startup. It could be a service startup. There are a lot of other things that we should be looking at as investors. But unfortunately, what most investors look at is how many users have you got, and, you know, how much revenue are you making? With my strategy now, I focus, and I typically don't spend more than a couple of hours before deciding to invest in a company, just because there are so many uncertainties that getting more time is not necessarily going to help you make a better decision. But what I really look for are, you know, when I look at an idea, I ask myself, will I be able to make a higher risk-adjusted return than what I would make in the stock markets? And this is because, you know, investing in startups is another asset class for me. On average, you know, in the stock markets, you can make 7% return. Can I make more than that? So I'm not expecting the 10x, 30x return that a lot of investors expect. I'm expecting, you know, a good enough return on my portfolio. One of the key things that I'm looking for, and this is mainly because of running my own startup and having met a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of, you know, investors, VCs, family offices, and all of that, I think the key thing I look for is the passion of the entrepreneur, the passion to make the company successful. And to be really clear, I actually don't care if the entrepreneur was, you know, a vice president, a managing director in some corporate before. It's about how passionate are they about the product.
And I'm intrigued then to kind of, you know, pattern recognition and this ability to assess founders and potential returns develops over time. So when did you start making angel investments?
So I started in 2013. So just my background, as I said, I've been, you know, trading and investing in the markets for 15 years. So I've done everything from stocks, commodities, foreign exchange, indices, you know, futures and options and all of that. But 2013 was when I when I started. I think one of my early investments was Cedars, and they looked to raise their own crowdfunding round.
And what did you find hard then about making those first investments? You had no comparables to compare the startups against. You know, now you've got a portfolio, you can compare and refine your process and your investment decision making. So what was the hardest thing about making those investments at the beginning?
You know, actually, funnily enough, it was quite easy.
Okay, tell me more.
I mean, obviously, I'm a risk-taking individual because I invest in the stock markets. But looking at, you know, for example, Cedars, one is a really strong company, you know, good in terms of users and, you know, revenue and all of that. But the SEIS and EIS, you know, makes it a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, it was like, you know, I'm getting a lot of money back from the government, you know, all of that. So it was actually quite easy.
And because, you know, I speak to a lot of angels and they say just seeing the sheer kind of numbers, whatever it may be, going out of your account, just the personal feeling was challenging. Did you find that at all, or were you perfectly comfortable with the risk?
I am comfortable with the risk. And as I said, you know, I have actually traded in the stock markets. I've taken leverage positions in markets where, you know, sometimes my positions are more than my net worth. Mm. So I've lived with that risk. So for me, it was, this is actually pretty low risk given the tax benefits.
I love this. Startup investing is low risk. Wow. What an advert that is.
In the UK, yes, absolutely.
I'd love to hear then, if you do have a potential war story of maybe when something hasn't gone right for you in your angel investing, and you don't say the company, but is there any time when it hasn't gone to plan and you've learned as a result and changed your thesis?
I think initially, a couple of investments, I didn't spend enough time understanding the entrepreneur and, you know, his or her passion into the business. That was a learning. I'm a little uncomfortable with a lot of entrepreneurs struggling with basic finance, you know, managing their numbers, you know, managing their cash flow. And that has been frustrating, but we've gone through that, not an issue. Touchwood, the companies that I've invested in, most are alive and doing a decent job.
And I'd love to then, before we dive into a quick fire round, talk about how kind of sum up this all together and see how your investment decision making's changed over time. You know, do you spend more time with the companies now? Do you like to befriend the founders? What's the kind of decision making change for you later?
So I think what I look for has changed slightly, but I do. And this is what I want to do is not spend more than 2 hours per startup before investing, because that gives you enough idea about, you know, whether you want to invest or not. Also, one thing is I realized is that I don't want to waste entrepreneurs' time, because, you know, their time is valuable, and fundraising is a distraction.
And I'd love to dive into a quick fire round with you now. So I say a short statement and you give me your immediate thoughts.
Sure.
So balancing investing to operating, what's the ratio?
So for me now, it's 99.9% on City Falcon, which is operations. And as I said, I'm looking to do 5 investments a year, so 5 startups and 2 hours max per startup.
And then advice to first-time angels?
Diversify, diversify, diversify. I've seen so many, you know, first-time angels saying, hey, this is a sure shot and I'm going to put all my money into it. Given that there is only a 10% chance for most startups succeeding, that's a really bad strategy. So invest in as many startups, spread it out.
And then favorite blog or newsletter, what are your must reads?
So I actually follow posts on LinkedIn very closely. And the reason I do that is, you know, it's a lot of people from my network. And I usually like, and I do interact with a lot of controversial posts that you see from entrepreneurs and investors.
And then overhyped and underhyped sectors, what are you kind of balking at when you see the amount of startups in that space, and where do you see real potential?
Yeah, so I do feel like if I look at fintech, right, there are some sections that are being overhyped. So, you know, be it P2P, for example, you know, payment space.
Yeah.
There are a lot of startups that do very similar things with not much innovation. And I think that there's some overhype there. In terms of underhype, I think there are a lot of sectors where you don't have the SEIS, EIS benefits. And again, I'm not 100% sure, but for example, retail. And I think you could do a lot more there. But because of not having these tax benefits, there is not much attention and investment going there.
And then I'd like to finish on hearing your most recent investment as an angel and why you said yes.
Sure. So there is, and the story is quite interesting. So I invested in lobster.media.
Okay.
And interestingly, I was pitching at the same event for funds for City Falcon. And at the event, I heard the entrepreneur. So, you know, Olga was speaking. And we actually didn't get any investors from that event, but I ended up investing in Lobster. And the reason for that is I really think they're solving a real problem. I like, you know, the entrepreneur. I can see the passion in her. And I do feel like it's a takeover target.
Well, fantastic. Well, Rusbert, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you on the show. I've hugely enjoyed chatting with you today. So thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And if you love the show with Rusbert today, then do not forget to head over to our e-learning academy at syndicateroom.com, where we have a host of articles and guides on startup investing from a variety of previous guests from the show. And we would love to hear what you think of the show, so you can tweet us at syndicateroom. As always, we would like to remind you that early stage investing is risky. Therefore, please ensure that you engage in the proper due diligence prior to making any investments. And thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. And we cannot wait to bring you next week's episode with Nancy Fetchney at flight.vc.